Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Ariana.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
We're lucky enough today to be joined by Mike Schubert of the Potterless podcast and Horse podcast. We recently had him on Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, and he mentioned how much he loved Ginny Weasley, and we thought that we would give him the opportunity to bless her.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am nervous just in the fact that men, as a whole, we are garbage. So I'm trying to prove that I'm really trying not to say that not all men, because that's also the worst. But I'm just trying to say hello. Not every single man is garbage, and we can be good, but we all should learn more. So here I am trying to represent us, but also not fall prey to doing what so many people have failed to do, which is just be good people.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful that you're trying. I think white men trying to figure out how to be good allies and feminists is like so important and like really a hard question. So I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah. And your vulnerability in framing it like that already. I feel like you're already acing this.
I just want to lay the cards out on the table.
So, Mike, who are you going to bless with us today?
I'm very excited because I will be blessing Ginny Weasley, who is easily my favorite Weasley, but also potentially my favorite character in the entire series. It's really hard between her and Hermione, but I think Ginny is absolutely fantastic. I see a lot of myself in Ginny, and I think that she deserves more love because I feel like the movie representation of her brings her overall appreciation down a little bit. So I'm here to defend the honor of Ginny and bless her in this episode.
Well, she doesn't need you to defend her, Mike.
I've made it 2 minutes in without being the worst. Well, Dang. We had a good run. Thank you so much for having me.
We all need help now and again. What are you blessing Ginny for?
Sure. So the main thing that I'll be centering this around, but there's offshoots of it, is that Ginny avoided the stereotype, the trap of becoming the bratty youngest sibling. And I say this as a youngest sibling that also I would like to think, and I would hope my older sister and my parents would confirm, that I am not and was not a brat either. I think it's something that can be easily fallen into is just, oh, the youngest, the baby of the group, blah, blah, blah. But I think Ginny established herself as probably the most put together of all the Weasley siblings that we learn a great deal about. Didn't learn that much about Charlie and barely about Bill, but Ginny's just fantastic. She stands up to Harry's shenanigans, she doesn't put up with his crap, and genuinely she knows when to be serious, when to be funny, how to toe that line, which Fred and George don't necessarily know how to do. So I feel like Ginny learned from all of her older siblings and helped her become a more well-rounded human being.
I especially think it's impressive because I'm a middle child, but I am the only girl. And so I was given special attentions as the only girl, right? Like that my brothers sort of fell into the boys and then Vanessa. And I feel like Ginny is the only girl and is the baby, could have really played into like wanting mom and dad's protection all the time. And instead, she's constantly rebelling against them, constantly saying, no, I want to fight in this war. No, I should be treated as an equal. And I think avoids a trap twice of the way that she could be.
Totally.
It's so interesting that we're talking about her avoiding the traps of the youngest sibling, because I think in the earlier books, in many of ways, she's depicted as falling right into that trap. Like the first time we see her, she's kind of like whining on platform 9¾ about wanting to go to Hogwarts and kind of like always trailing after her brothers. And I do think that that is like a typical younger sibling characterization. But there's a fine line between what I'm seeing in Ginny, which is a desire to grow up more quickly, to be, as you say, an equal with her brothers, and what we might call brattiness, which she is not. And I'm wondering what we think like defines brattiness.
I think it just goes down to trying to ask for special treatment because you are X. So like Vanessa pointed out, whether she plays the I'm the youngest card or plays I'm the only girl card, those are options to her to appeal to that, to try to get some sort of special treatment or more leniency from parents. Because I think that's what usually stirs up the negative connotation from it, is that older siblings get mad at younger siblings for getting to get away with things that the older sibling did not. And I don't think that Ginny ever truly asks for that or demands to be treated in a different way. In a lot of ways, she just wants to be another one of the Weasleys. She wants to join in on Fred and George's silliness. She wants to go with all of her older siblings to school. It's less about her trying to ask for special treatment because she's the youngest and more about, hey, just let me be a part of this family and be accepted as everyone else, even though I'm the youngest and even though I'm the only girl.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what it is that makes a brat a brat. And I think that yearning to be older and resisting the bounds on you is not brattiness. But I think every child, of course, is going to be frustrated with the bounds that are put on them. That is the job of the child, is to resist those things. But Ginny doesn't then constantly see herself as second fiddle to her brothers. She isn't in adulthood saying, well, you always do that. You always forget about me. Instead, she's carving out her own path and creating her own relationships with each of her brothers and standing up to them. I think the reason that we as adults have anxiety about kids who are brats is that we don't want them to grow up to be that way. And she doesn't, right? She grows up to see herself as an independent person and yet entirely a part of the Weasleys. Not like Percy, who's an independent person and tries to be better than the Weasleys, and not like someone like Dudley, who we think for at least a long time over-identifies with his family.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, any time you say that she is not like Percy, I think that's the biggest compliment that you could give anyone. So I think that's a huge plus in Ginny's favor.
We as a podcast are pretty sympathetic towards Percy. Casper's not in the room and he's the big Percy defender, but I'll take on that mantle while he's not here.
Which is what?
That he is Hermione if Hermione hadn't been attacked by the troll. He is the kid who learns what authority is and how to gain status and just follows it. And he can't get outside of that idea of how to succeed. And I think it's wrong. And I think he's nasty to his family at moments. But that's a really hard lesson to learn. And I feel bad for him that he didn't learn it.
I think that the Percy Hermione comparison is a really important one. But I also think that the Percy Ginny comparison is an important one. I think that he is bullied by Fred and George.
Absolutely.
And responds like a brat. And Ginny is similarly bullied and gets in on the joke. And it is not on the onus of the bullied to handle it well. I'm not saying, and shame on Percy for not, you know, getting in on the joke. But it makes Ginny downright heroic. I think she could easily have gone the way of Percy.
But I don't think they tease her in the same way.
They humiliate her about the fact that the boy she has a crush on is in the same room as her. They are awful to her.
Yeah.
And I think she could easily pull away from them the way that Percy does. And instead, she's like, I'm going to figure out how to do this too and do it better. She hates the way that Fred and George tease her, and she learns how to tease better.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about her is that she, in those moments, doesn't get hurt by them in the way that I see Percy getting hurt by Fred and George. That he feels really attacked and bottles up all of that feeling and is like, well, I'm different from you. I'm better than you, and goes his separate way. Whereas Ginny, I don't know, I think maybe Ginny believes them that she should be embarrassed of how she feels about Harry. And that makes me sad.
What do you think, Mike? How does she end up not like Percy?
The worst thing that you can ever do when a bully is trying to pick on you is give them the reaction that they want, which is anger or running away or telling mom and dad or doing whatever. Any sort of negative response like that is what is only going to make the bully want to do it more and more. So Ginny, once she gets old enough, doesn't give them that satisfaction, but instead she goes back and claps back at them. I have a whole list of Ginny quotes here just in case we needed to get to them. And there's one where she makes fun of Fred and George when they actually start their joke shop. She says that we've been hearing explosions out of the room for ages, but we never thought that they were actually making things. We thought they just liked the noise, which is just a great little dig. I think Fred and George just end up respecting that she doesn't really back down, but instead gives them a taste of their own medicine and is ready to clap back at them and stand up to them. And it's something that she ends up doing with Ron as well. Ron tries to act like he is making decisions for her when he yells at her for making out with Dean Thomas in the secret passageway. And she calls him out on his BS. Like, don't get mad at me just because the only person you've kissed is Aunt Muriel. So I think she just ultimately doesn't want to take any flack from her older siblings, and her response to it is not to go crying to mom and dad, which I think is the brattiness that we're alluding to, which is what Percy falls prey to. She instead is just going to take it and either call it out when it's unjust, like from Ron, or just serve it back to them at a different time when it's Fred and George.
Yeah, I think we see that what she's advocating for over and over again, to be taken seriously, to be a part of the conversation, that she is fully equipped to do that, even more so than many of the other characters, that once she's in the room, she can dish it back just as hard as it's being dished to her. And the self-confidence isn't just like, oh, I'm a little kid and I want to be part of this. It's like, legitimately, she has strong things to say.
We see her being the youngest as something that Molly really exploits to a certain extent, right? Harry in book five is like, I'm entitled to know everything that's going on with the Order of the Phoenix because it's about me. And then Ron and Hermione are basically like, Harry is going to tell us everything anyway. And Molly is like, oh my God, all of these children are growing up way too fast. The only one I can control is Ginny. And so she siphons off Ginny. I am not judging Molly. I admire Molly for trying to protect her daughter's childhood. But I also admire Ginny sort of going kicking and screaming because she is just as mature as Ron, right?
More.
Right.
And so she has, you know, Ginny is sort of a beacon of like, it's not the age, it's the person. And she might be the youngest, but she is certainly not the least mature.
Not at all. Not by any means. She's a very competent witch in terms of doing spells, doing well in Dumbledore's army, and all of that. She's a very competent Quidditch player. Shows that she can play two positions very well. She shows that she sometimes has better jokes than Fred and George and has great bits, whether it's poking fun at people, like we talked about her making fun of Fred and George, or she has the thing where when they have the DA meeting, she pulls an Umbridge hem-hem to get everyone to pay attention, and then Harry just busts out laughing. She just has so many great moments, and I think it's very impressive that she has this internal determination to prove herself, and it's very much an action speaks louder than words kind of thing, where she's just out there to show that she's competent, show that she can be there. And I think it ultimately comes to a point when Molly is saying no in the seventh book that she wants to go fight with him. But she's like, have you read the books, Molly? I'm great. Let me go out there. So I think it shows her character that she wants to prove to everyone why she deserves to be part of whatever conversation it may be.
And, you know, I wonder, Ariana, to your point, so obviously, we don't wish trauma upon our children, but Percy is somebody who doesn't have a troll moment, and Ginny does, right? Ginny gets possessed by Voldemort.
Right.
And has a really near-death experience, and I think that, you know, having reread this in the era of Me Too, I see it more and more as an assault.
Ooh.
I mean, she's unwillingly possessed by a man, right? An older man.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And I wonder if that's another thing that maybe separates her. In the beginning of book two, she's shy and embarrassed about her crush. And right. I think she has this, like, unfortunate maturing moment. You know, Percy's maturing moment is that war breaks out. And Ginny's maturing moment is this horrible trauma that happens to her. And what we wish for our children is that they mature and become adults who take responsibility for their own identity without these traumas happening to them. But I think the missed opportunities that the adults around Ginny don't honor is she has gone through this, she has learned a lot, and therefore she is a warrior in this war, actually has been for longer than many of us.
Yeah. I think absolutely what happens to Ginny is formative for her. And I think her being the only girl is formative for her. I think there are a lot of skills that girls are taught that boys are not. And I think the ways that we see Ginny as incredibly empathetic to Luna in this book is both because she is at the margins of her family and is always talked down to, and so she's more sensitive to people at the margins, and because women are taught the soft skills of empathy in a way that boys are not, and that lets her and Hermione be more empathetic to Luna than Ron and Harry are. The one thing I'll say in defense of Percy is, like, I wonder what you do in that family if you're just not as funny as the other kids.
Ooh.
Like, I think Ginny is lucky in that she can kind of be funny and play Quidditch and have all of these high currency skills in her family. And I don't think that Percy necessarily has those skills. And I understand, therefore, why he pushes himself away, because I think it must be really hard for him to fit in.
Mike, do you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, even the members of the family who haven't been defined as funny have something else. Bill is just super hot and really cool. And Charlie, they say that the twins never pick on him because he was stronger than
right.
them. He was born muscular and they weren't going to pick on him. So it's funny because you try to think of, okay, well, what's Percy good at? I don't know, following rules. So he doesn't really have anything to stand up to Fred and George and push back on them in a different way. But that being said, I mean, he also could just not exactly give Fred and George what they're looking for. Like, he falls so into the trap of exactly the type of teasing that they are providing and what they are trying to get out of him in terms of reaction. He just gives them exactly what they want. So it is hard to say this, to be like, yes, Percy, as a teenager, have a perfect response to the jokes and the pranks and all the stuff that your twin brothers are doing. It's so easy to hindsight, Monday morning quarterback, look back and be like, yeah, dude, how could you do this? Especially because he comes around eventually. He's really bad for just a couple years, which, I don't know, we all have grown a lot since high school, and a lot of people have made poor decisions and are not proud of the people they were in high school. So I don't, like, actually have true disdain for Percy. He was a teenager, and he didn't understand the corrupt government around him that he was working for. So I don't want to, I like to poke fun at him, but, like, I understand that, you know, it's so hard to put these adult expectations on a bunch of kids because some of us, myself included, like, we sucked. Like, I was bad. We were all bad. Like, we were seventh grade. We were all horrible people, I'm sure.
Oh, I was.
Like, so concerned about popularity and getting dates with the cute girls and all this other stuff that, looking back, it's, ugh, yikes. So I'm glad that we get the redemption arc of Percy. Really quickly, one thing that you did point out about Ginny not forgetting is one of the best quotes that Ginny and Harry have is when Ginny gets upset with Harry for not talking to her about him not dealing well with the being possessed by Voldemort stuff. She brings it to him saying, that was a bit stupid of you, seeing as you don't know anyone but me who's been possessed by you-know-who, and I can tell you how it feels. And then Harry says, I forgot. And Ginny says, lucky you.
Yeah.
Which, ooh.
Top 5 best lines of the whole book.
Oh, 100%. I think it's truly showing there that even however many years removed she is from the situation, she has not forgotten it. She will not forget it. She can't forget it. And I think, Vanessa, you saying bringing it, treating it like an assault, which is awful, but I think accurate, is it's something that obviously she's looks back on with horror, but she was not going to let it define her, and she uses it, if anything, as a motivator to become a better person, to not let something like that happen again, to be strong at her craft. And I think it's the approach of her remembering it and using it as fuel rather than letting it break her down.
It's not just to not let it happen to her again. It's to not let it happen to anybody again.
100%.
Right? She becomes this representative to the cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in book 7, she is, even though she's mandated to be back at Hogwarts, she is still part of the DA and still messing with the Karos, right? Like, she takes everything as an opportunity mm-hmm. to be radical. And I think that that is such a beautiful invitation for how to respond, if we can, to some of the bad things that happen to all of us in our lives, right? Like, we all have opportunities mm-hmm. to take things that have happened to us and turn them into beautiful motivations. And Ginny just embodies that so well. Can I just defend the twins for 1 second?
Yes.
Yes, do it.
They are the first ones to welcome Percy back. When Percy shows up and goes,
true.
What can I say? I'm so sorry. I forget if it's Fred or George, but one of them says, well, we can't ask for more than that, can we? And, like, they are the one who breaks the ice on behalf of the Weasley family and welcomes Percy back.
That's true.
I do think Fred and George have an emotional intelligence that keeps them right on the boundary of, like, knowing when to be funny and when to stop. I think in their family, it gets a little muddled. And as we've covered in the past, like, I don't think Ron gets that from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, they get Molly presents,
yeah, I know.
Right? They know when to stop joking and take care of Molly.
Yeah, and they're also very thoughtful towards Harry when he gives them the money that he wins from the Triwizard Tournament. They never let him forget how much they appreciate that. They're nice to him at the joke shop afterwards. They're so thankful of him when he gives them the money, all that other stuff. They are very appreciative and show that. I think Fred and George are kind of like those class clown kids that also get straight A's and you're like, wait, what? Fred and George got 100 on the chemistry test? That kind of thing where they're so goofy, but at the same time are incredibly gifted wizards. And I think they fall a little more towards on the silly versus serious spectrum, but not too far where it's the point where it's detrimental. I think Ginny toes that line just a little bit better. But I think we just get to see it more because the books, for the most part, are Harry's perspective or whatever the narrator actually is. But you get to see Ginny interact with Harry a bit more and thus deal with these more serious topics and subjects. And she always has a great approach to it, a great response to it, even when Harry is being a Pratt, she is able to weather the storm and, of course, fire off zingers whenever she can, which I always appreciate.
Well, I think, Ariana, you were leading us to sort of the last possible comparison of Ginny within the Weasley family, right? We've compared Ginny to the twins, we've compared Ginny to Percy, but comparing Ginny to Ron, I think, is another really important comparison, right? Because Ron, to a large extent, never quite get over that Harry is the chosen one. Right? He leaves in large part over it. We see when he fights the Horcrux that, like, this is the existential angst of his life, that he's worried that Hermione is actually in love with Harry. Why would she choose you when she could have him? Whereas Ginny has a crush on Harry as a celebrity, but gets over it really quickly, right? And starts to see him as a human being. I think Ron goes from seeing him 100% a celebrity to 80% celebrity, 20% friend to 80% friend, 20% celebrity. But
I don't know. I think Ron is the first person to not see Harry as a celebrity. I think them sharing those chocolate frogs in the first scene they have together is Ron being able to see Harry as a human being. And I think he always does. He always sees him as his bro. And that's why he's so jealous of him, because he's like, Harry and I are exactly the same. Like, why does everyone care about him so much more than they care about me?
I think the difference between Ron and Ginny's approach to Harry's celebrity is that Ron doesn't know when to accept that Harry is going through some stuff that are out of his control and he can't really deal with it. The biggest example of Ron's shortcoming in this is in book 4, when Harry is chosen for the Goblet of Fire. Harry didn't do this on purpose. He doesn't want to do it. If he could, Harry would not be in this tournament where he is most likely going to die. But still, Ron gets very upset. And I think the point that you were both getting at is that, like, Ariana, you were saying that he wants everyone to say, like, me and Harry are the same. He's just my friend. It's almost like an opposite of the Ginny thing, where he started as just a normal friendship with Harry. And then as the series goes on, Harry becomes a bit more of a celebrity when bigger, badder things start happening. And I think Ron resents that things are different than when they were first friends. So I think Ron is a bit more reluctant to know when to just say, okay, this is happening because you're Harry Potter and you're in this situation. The Ginny, on the other hand, takes it really well in the 7th book especially, but even at the end of 6, when Harry does the Spider-Man breakup with her, which is like, oh, I have to break up with you to keep you safe kind of thing. And when he first says it, Ginny says, quote, it's for some stupid noble reason, isn't it? Which is great. It's her realizing, okay, this is Harry. He's going to do this. He kind of has to do this. I don't really have a say in the matter, rather than try to protest him on it. I will just let him know how I feel. And then we'll see if we can move on. And then same kind of thing in the beginning of 7, where she says he's not surprised that he's not going back to school. She knows he's going to hunt after Voldemort. I saw this coming kind of thing. I think that Ron is a bit more stubborn with knowing when to get to the points where he's just like, okay, this is Harry being the chosen one, and I just have to get over it. I don't think Ron wants to get over it because they didn't start their friendship that way.
I mean, I think the great thing about Ginny is that she has so many friends that aren't Harry and Hermione, right? Like, we see her ditch them when they get on the Hogwarts Express several times for the friends in her year.
She knows who Luna is before them. She's friends with Neville, even though they're not in the same year.
Right. Like, she has this whole context that Ron doesn't have in order to figure out who she is and to get a sense of self-worth and to develop social skills that isn't connected to Harry. And by the time she comes back to Harry, I think she is so confident that his fame isn't threatening to her in a way that Ron never has that opportunity. It's always him and Harry to the end. And I wish he could have had other friends because I think it would have been healthier for their relationship.
I think that this is a way that men are victims of the patriarchy, and this is something that we, like, know from studies, that women will report having much higher number of close friends and of people they feel comfortable confiding in than men.
True.
Especially white men, at least in the United States. I don't know about in other cultures, but, and I do, I think that this is a way that men are victims of the patriarchy, where you have to be tough, and you're seen as having all this power, so you can't show vulnerability. And the twins, I mean, we've said this before, but the twins' superpowers that they have each other, like, they just always have somebody. And Percy and Ron don't. And Ginny is so good about going out and finding her own community and obviously being a Weasley with her red hair and not being ashamed of being a Weasley, but not only being a Weasley.
Yeah. She has the association to her family, but she's not necessarily tied to it or tied to another person. You could say that Ron is inherently tied to Harry. It's always Ron and Harry, like you were saying. But I think Ginny, especially the way it's framed in the books, because I don't know if this is exactly right, but I feel like Ginny's kind of there in book one, but then she's not in school, obviously. And then book two, obviously, big thing because she gets possessed. But then you kind of don't hear a lot about Ginny until book five. And then it's like, oh, yeah, Ginny, she's dating Michael Corner. And, oh, yeah, Ginny, she's starting to be on the Quidditch team now. And then all of a sudden it's like, Dean Thomas is dating Ginny. And you get the vibe like, people really like Ginny. Just as if she has friends, she gets good at sports. Apparently dudes are lining up to date her. So it feels like Ginny.
Andy Parkinson's jealous.
Yeah, she's like, it feels like Ginny kind of just went on her own to carve her own path. And maybe that comes with just her not wanting to be like, yes, I'm a Weasley, but I don't want to be defined by being a Weasley. I'm more than that. I am my own person, which I think is something that is the flip side of being the bratty younger sibling, is that you can be the younger sibling that wants to be different than all of the other ones. And I think Ginny took that road and kind of forged her own path while still adopting some of the best parts of her older siblings, like the silliness of Fred and George and the wizarding skills of Molly, etc.
So, Mike, I don't think you meant to, but I think you led us into blessing all of the Weasleys today.
Yes, good. I'm glad. I mean, they're all great. And that's another thing that makes bashing on Percy hard, is that everyone else in the family is so good. If you compared Percy to a regular family, you'd be like, okay, yeah, he's fine. He had his shortcomings, blah, blah, blah. All the Weasleys are just so good. They're so fantastic. So I'm glad that we have expanded it beyond, because they all deserve some blessing. But I will say that top two should be Molly and Ginny. A little bit of an edge to Ginny, because she's just so funny. She's so funny.
What final blessing do you want to offer to our dear Ginny?
I think for me, the blessing that I want to give to Ginny and why I appreciate her so much is that I'm someone that tries to be funny, and I try to lift people up when appropriate. And I sometimes fall prey to being funny when the situation doesn't call for it, or being a little too mean in certain circumstances. So for me personally, Ginny is the inspiration of know when to use your humor in the right way and to tailor it in the right way so that it is appropriate for whatever situation you're going for, whether that is contributing to the fun of something or trying to cheer someone up or whatever. So I think the blessing that I want to round out here for Ginny is just thanking and blessing her for knowing when to toe the line of serious and funny and finding that balance, which is a tricky one to find, and just avoiding falling victim to those traps that we can fall into. In Ginny's case, it's the younger sibling or being the only girl. For me, it's, like I said at the beginning, trying to avoid the traps of being like, I'm a privileged white man and everything is great. No, everything's not. The world's on fire. So I think she's for me, is a good inspiration of knowing how to approach things and knowing what things that are easy to fall into, trying to not fall into those things.
Well, Ariana and Mike, in order to honor all of the hard work that you have done to prepare for this blessing, I've written a quiz.
Oh, boy.
To honor another great Jenny. Jenny is a nickname for Virginia often. Oh. And so I'm going to ask you both three questions about Virginia Woolf.
Virginia Woolf is one of those, yes, I know who that is, but also couldn't name anything she has done. But maybe I haven't, I just don't know it.
So she is an early 20th century novelist. She's most famous for Mrs. Dalloway and To the Lighthouse. But she wrote, I can't tell you off the top of my head, probably 8 novels. I mean, she's one of my all-time favorite writers. She is like the epitome of modernist British writing, a very anti-war novelist who used women's lives in order to explore very big themes. And so I'm going to ask you 3 questions that have nothing to do with anything that actually matters about Virginia Woolf, but that are tangentially related to her. And neither of you would have any reason to know any of these things about our dear Jenny.
Okay.
So, Mike, since you're our guest, I'm always going to let you guess first.
Sounds fair.
Okay.
So question 1, who did Virginia Woolf's niece, Angelica, marry? A, the son of the midwife who delivered her. B, the former lover of her biological father. C, the man who raised her but wasn't her biological father. Or D, her childhood best friend.
All the other ones are kind of gross in a little bit of what different ways. So I am hoping the answer is childhood best friend, even though it is the most boring.
Can I just tell you what my guess would be?
Yeah. Mike just gets to guess first.
My guess is definitely C, the man who raised her.
No, it is B, the former lover of her biological father. So her biological father was a man by the name of Duncan Grant, who her mother, Vanessa Bell, had a brief affair with, but Vanessa was in love with Duncan for forever. And when Angelica was born, they decided that Clive Bell was going to pretend to be her father, and Duncan Grant and his lover were standing and looking at Angelica, and Duncan's lover looked at her and said, she's so beautiful and perfect, I'm going to marry her one day. And 19 years later, he married her. And this was all kept a secret from Angelica Bell until she was in her 20s.
Wow.
It's very the werewolf from Twilight.
Yes!
Situation.
Yes! He imprinted on her. Anyway, it is
oh my gosh.
There's a great book that Angelica wrote about this. It's called Deceived with Kindness, where she talks about how she was deceived her whole life about who her real father was and the fact that her husband was a lover of her biological father's. Anyway, question number 2. Right now, the score is 0-0. Question 2 is that Virginia Woolf and her husband, Leonard, famously had a very strange pet that they acquired in July of 1934, and they came into possession of it because their friend Victor Rothschild found that this pet was too sickly for him to take care of. What unusual pet was it? A, a skunk, B, a lobster, C, a marmoset, or D, a shark?
Definitely not a shark.
I'm going to go with a marmoset just because I'm not exactly sure what that animal is. So it seems the most interesting.
You are correct. It was a marmoset that they named Mitts.
Amazing.
They once had to hide Mitts from the Nazis.
What?
Yes. There's like a famous story about being in Germany and there was a Nazi parade happening and Leonard had to hide Mitts under his shirt because it was an illegal animal. And Leonard was also scared because he was a Jew. Anyway, they lived wild lives.
I have since Googled marmosets, and they are very cute.
They are.
Should we bring it back?
I love them.
Trendy pet of the future.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone go get a marmoset and name it Mitts. Okay, so Mike, you have one. So I'm going to let Ariana try to go first on this one to see if she has a chance to tie it up.
Cool.
Because we love a tie.
Perfect.
So our last question is, Virginia Woolf had an animal nickname. Which of the following was her nickname? A, goat, B, goose, C, dolphin, or D, dragon?
This gets so high stakes for me.
It's so sad how high stakes this is for you.
Because I can reason each of them.
Just pick one and reason that for me.
Okay. Virginia Woolf, the goose. It just sounds right to my ear. So I'm going to say goose.
That is incorrect. Mike, what would you like to guess?
I think goat because it feels like a wolf would eat a goat. So it feels like a fun nickname to give to someone whose last name is literally wolf. So I'm going to say goat.
That is correct.
Yes.
So Mike is our winner. You got 2 out of 3.
Yeah, that's really, you did really well.
Congratulations. You got a D.
Thank you. I will take it. That's fantastic. I feel great.
Mike, thank you so much for bravely coming onto our feminist space and blessing the fantastic Ginny Weasley. It was a delight to have you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored that I was asked, and I'm always trying to do my best to learn how to get out of my little bubble and, you know, be a better feminist, because I thankfully see lots of examples of bad things that people do, and I'm always just trying to learn. So I'm glad that I could have this discussion and frame it in a way that I am very comfortable with, which is just talking about how good Ginny Weasley is. It made this a very smooth process for me.
Yeah, you defended her really well.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm very glad.
This week's episode of Women of Harry Potter is a Not Sorry production, produced by me, Vanessa Zoltan, Ariana Nettleman, and Chelsea Urson. Thanks again to Mike Schubert from the Potterless Podcast for being on with us this week, and our music, as always, is by Nick Bull. We will talk to you in 2 weeks.